Now, secondly, awareness of self. Now, by this we don't mean anything very metaphysical. We mean simply awareness of the changing empirical self, which is in any case all that we usually experience. Traditionally in Buddhism, awareness of self is of three kinds, of increasing degrees of subtlety. First, there's awareness of the body and its movements, including the breathing process, on which, of course, there's a whole concentration technique based. Traditionally, it is taught that as one moves about, one should be aware of just how one is moving. If you're standing, be aware that you are standing. If you're sitting, be aware that you are sitting. Experience yourself sitting. If you move your hand, be aware you are moving your hand. If you close the door, be aware that you are closing the door. If you are holding a book, be aware that you are holding the book. If you are running, be aware that you are running. If you are talking, be aware that you are talking. Now, if we try to practice in this way, even for a little while, we shall very speedily become aware that we have sort of lapses of consciousness, lapses of awareness. There are whole periods, not to say tracts of time, when we don't really know what we are doing, in a quite literal sense. We don't know what we're doing with our body, if we are in fact doing something with our body. We don't know what happens to our hand. We don't know where it is or what it's doing. We don't even know where our head is sometimes. So this is the sort of teaching that traditionally we are given, that we should be aware of our physical body. Be aware of its posture. Be aware of its movements. And above all, in a sense, be aware of the breath, this most subtle part of the bodily functioning. Be aware of it coming in and going out, coming in and going out. Now, this is the simplest form of self-awareness. Just being aware of the physical body. Being aware of your feet, being aware of your hands, and so on. But even though it's the simplest, it's still very difficult. And it's the foundation of all the rest, that is to say, all the other forms of awareness or mindfulness of self. And it's traditionally held that if you can't practice this, if you can't succeed in being aware of your physical body and its movements, it's not much use trying to practice any other more advanced form of awareness or mindfulness. And from Japan there comes a little story to illustrate this point. It's a story, as so many of these stories are, about a young monk. And the young monk, we're told, went to an old monk, because the old monk happens to be a great meditation teacher. And the young monk wanted to learn meditation. He wanted to become enlightened. So he made a long journey to the monastery where the old monk, the meditation master, lived. And after travelling for a long while, mostly on foot, very late at night, he reached his destination. He knocked on the gate, he was admitted. And it so happened that during the last stages of his journey, it had been raining heavily. So he folded up his umbrella, put it to one side, took off his shoes, put them also to one side, and then he was ushered into the presence of the master. So he made his three bows, his three prostrations, and the master asked him, "What have you come for?" He said, "Well, enlightenment, of course." So the master said, "Well, that's very good. Let me ask you a few questions." So the monk sort of sat back, the young monk sat back, getting ready to answer questions on Buddhist philosophy, logic, his spiritual experiences, and so on. But all that the master asked was, "When you came here just now, what was the weather like?" You see, this is the sort of question that masters sometimes ask. People get very disappointed. They expect to be asked about nirvana and so on. But all that the master asks is, well, what was the weather like? Huh? So the young monk, rather surprised, said, well, it was raining rather heavily. So the old monk said, oh, yes. And did you get wet? He said, oh, no, I had an umbrella. So the old master said, well, where is the umbrella? So the young monk thought to himself, well, this conversation is getting more and more ridiculous. But anyway, he politely answered, it's outside. I left it outside with my shoes. So the old master thought a minute, then he said, tell me, on which side of the door did you leave your umbrella and shoes? The young monk thought and thought and thought, and he couldn't remember. So the old master said, that won't do. He said, if you can't remember where you put them, where you left them, whether on the right-hand side of the door or the left-hand side, it means you just weren't mindful when you did it. So if you can't even practice mindfulness, how do you expect to practice meditation? How do you expect to gain enlightenment? You better go away. This is not the place for you. So the poor young monk had to depart. So this is a little traditional story illustrating this point, that awareness of the body, awareness of one's physical body and its movements, what it is doing, is the foundation of any subsequent higher practice of mindfulness and awareness. All right, suppose you pass the test. Suppose you know where your umbrella is at this particular moment. Well, then you can go on to practicing awareness of feelings. Awareness of whether one's feeling tone, as it were, is pleasant, pleasurable, or painful, or whether you're experiencing a sort of grey, neutral state. And from there we can go on to being aware of our emotions, being aware of whether we're experiencing love, or hate, or fear, or anxiety, or desire, or hope, or jealousy, or delight, or expectation, or disgust, any other emotional state. When we experience it, knowing that we experience it. If we can do this, if we can be aware of our feelings, aware of our emotions, aware of our whole emotional life, then we shall find that this has a twofold effect. Our negative emotions will tend to be dissolved, and our positive emotions will tend to be refined still further. Or at least, even if the negative emotions are not dissolved, at least they'll be brought very much under control. Now, thirdly, there's what is known as awareness of thoughts. And here we become aware that very few people really think. Very few people are really masters of their thoughts. In most cases, thoughts just drift through our minds. Thoughts, as it were, take possession of us. We don't know why they've come. We don't know where they've come from very often. They just come, and here they are. And very often there's little we can do about it. We just have to tolerate them, even if we want to meditate and keep our minds free from thoughts. We just have to watch the thoughts, playing, as it were, rioting, as it were, in the playground of our minds. And it seems we're powerless to chase them away. So we don't think. We've no control over our thoughts. They're not our own thoughts, really. We're not masters of them. All that's happening is that we're subject to this very loose association of ideas, which is very easily interrupted, very easily redirected. But if we become aware of what is happening, if we cultivate this awareness of our thoughts, then thinking becomes more purposeful. In a sense, our thinking becomes our own. It becomes an active rather than a passive process. And what we call wandering thoughts gradually come to be eliminated, and we experience an altogether more peaceful and more harmonious state of mind. Now, this is the traditional classification of awareness of self, that it consists in awareness of the body and its movements, awareness of feelings and emotional states, and awareness of thoughts. But other classifications are also possible. We can speak, for instance, as I have done on a number of previous occasions, in terms of various kinds of psychological conditioning. By such conditioning, psychological conditioning, we mean the tendency of our actions to be determined without our realizing it by previous patterns of experience. In many cases, patterns laid down very early in life indeed. And this conditioning is of various kinds. We're conditioned by the fact that we are human beings and not animals. That is to say, we're conditioned by the fact that we are humanoid mammals as distinct from non-humanoid mammals. We're conditioned again by the fact of being either male or female. We're conditioned by the place where we were born, conditioned by our race, conditioned by our nationality. We're conditioned by the social group to which we belong, conditioned by caste, conditioned by class, conditioned by profession, conditioned by party, conditioned by church, even conditioned by religion. And such conditioning also is resolved through, by means of, awareness. In other words, awareness of self. To the extent that we become aware, really aware, that we're psychologically conditioned in all these various ways, to that extent, we become free, become emancipated from that conditioning.